Time now for NHL Hour with Bill Clement and Commissioner Gary Bettman on NHL Home Ice.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the NHL Hour. This is Gary Bettman along with Bill Clement, and we are coming to you live from the General Managers meetings in Chicago, Illinois. We'll be joined a little later by a number of the general managers. I won't tell you who yet. We'll keep it a surprise. But we will also try to take your calls, answer your emails. The call-in number is 1-877-645-6696. That's 1-877-645-6696. And the email address is nhlhour@nhl.com.
So this is fantastic. I mean, you came in, and we joke about this all the time, but you came in 8 seconds to air. You hit your mark as usual, but now I know you weren't in your office because we're not in New York, we're in Chicago, but it sounds like you were out drumming up interviews for the show.
No, actually, if truth be told, our Vice President of Communications, Frank Brown, was doing that in the course of the meeting, which is still going on. Actually, it probably has about another half hour to go, and I think I told Frank to start whispering in general managers' ears if they want to go home today. A certain number of them have to come up and visit you and I somewhere else in the hotel in which we're comfortably ensconced. Meanwhile, this is our second day together. You hosted the Lester Patrick Awards at the St. Paul Hotel in St. Paul, Minnesota. For our listeners who don't know, for a number of years, USA Hockey, the New York Rangers, and the league have given out the Lester Patrick Award in honor of service to the game in the United States. The Ranger connection, which would be the one thing that, why is that?
Right.
Lester Patrick was there a long time coach and manager, and he was a visionary and one of the, you know, founding fathers of hockey the way it's played at the elite level in these days. You know, he was an innovator, and he and the Patrick family were about all things hockey.
Sure.
And we had a nice luncheon. Phil Housley and Brian Burke, Ted Lindsay and Bob Nagle were all given the honor of receiving the award. Interestingly enough, Ted Lindsay had an interesting week because in addition to receiving this statue of Lester Patrick, which is part of the award that you're presented, he was immortalized in Detroit with a 7.5-foot bronze and granite statue, tough as nails like him. And the other three all have St. Paul or Minnesota connections because of Bob Nagle, who was the founding owner of the Wild and just recently sold. Phil Housley was born in St. Paul, went to St. Paul South High School, and went directly from high school to the NHL.
As an 18-year-old.
Scotty Bowman drafted him in Buffalo. And Brian Burke went to Edina, not to slight Bob Nagle. He went to Minnetonka.
So they don't get started on that. There are so many rivalries with Minnesota high schools because of hockey.
Well, you know, and for those of you who have never been to the XL Energy Center, which is a wonderful building, the concourse is draped, lined with the sweaters from all of the high school hockey teams in Minnesota. And, you know, some people, including the Minnesota Wild, call Minnesota the state of hockey, and their high school hockey tournament is renowned.
It was a fantastic day, and I'd be remiss if I didn't point out I was just subbing for Doc Emrick, who usually hosts the Lester Patrick Awards luncheon, and he had a game that he needed to broadcast last night. But I was so impressed with the greatness of the people and the things that they've accomplished, receiving the award and the humility with which they received the award and they spoke. I mean, I was touched by every one of them. It was a fantastic day, and thank you for having me there, and thank you for allowing me to come to Chicago. Otherwise, I'd be sitting back in New York right now.
Well, thank you for being had.
Speaking of being had, that's what we want to do. The phone number, 877, how's that for a segue? 877-645-6696. Bill Clement with NHL Commissioner Gary Bettman. We're getting ready to take your calls, and we're going to be joined, hopefully, by those general managers that
to be named later.
Yeah, that would
like, like the trades they do, to be named later. We're planning on seeing, among others, Brian Lawton from Tampa, Steve Yzerman from Detroit, although he's not technically the GM. He's here with Kenny Holland, Darcy Regier, Daryl Sutter. So,
what's your role in the it's the GM meetings. What's your official function?
Well, that's a very good question. I sit in on the meetings, and there's a good candid dialogue. Coley Campbell plans the agenda. He runs the meeting, and I charm in. You know, there's frequently a league or commissioner's perspective that's needed, particularly on some issues, even some of the rule changes and you know, what we want as a group the game to be. The general managers are the caretakers of the game, and we seek their guidance, their knowledge, their wisdom. Many of them are former players of you know, quite note. From our standpoint, you know, I've always enjoyed going to the meetings. And I think, you know, in terms of keeping the meetings, when you have a disparate group, particularly, you know, they're all competitors on the ice in terms of who's going to win, I try and keep a little bit of order, and I try and keep the discussions a little channeled, because when you have such a knowledgeable and passionate group together, you can start by discussing one issue and go off on some really good tangents.
Sure.
And so, you know, my role, because I have a little bit of experience of running these large meetings with the Board of Governors, is, you know, after we've meandered a little bit, which doesn't always happen, I'll kind of bring us back to the issue and see if make sure we're on target. But Coley Campbell, who's our senior executive vice president of hockey operations, does a terrific job. And as I said, this is a really terrific group, and there's probably no group in the world that cares more about, you know, the game.
Are some teams represented by more than just their GM? How many reps is a team allowed in the GM's meetings?
We have three meetings a year. Typically, certainly one meeting a year, the multi-day meeting that's held in February or March, is one per club, the general manager. This meeting, general managers were allowed to bring somebody else, typically their assistant general manager or another senior hockey executive from the organization. So the room, you know, has between league people and the team representatives, there are probably 80 people in the room. And we're in a ballroom in the hotel. It's a large table. There are microphones. And so that's, you know, part of my responsibilities as well. Coley's dealing with most of the substance. I try and keep a little bit of order, although it's not chaotic, because, you know, everybody's very focused on wanting to do the very best for the game. And then the third meeting, sometimes it's multiple per team. And
sure,
more often than not, these meetings are one, because when you have 60, 70, 80 people in a room for a meeting, it's kind of hard to have good discussions.
You think?
and so having 30 managers in the room tends to keep it more focused. And in fact, the multi-day meeting, is one where we tend for a day or two to break into smaller groups on particular topics. And then the group of five or six will have a good discussion and report back to the rest of the group. So that's how it works, and the third meeting varies.
Yeah. Our NHL Hour is coming your way from Chicago, where the NHL general managers are meeting. Our phone number, 877-645-6696. If you have a question for the commissioner, we don't screen calls, we don't limit them, and we take on all issues. We don't. The commissioner does. I'm Bill Clement, sitting with Gary
Bettman. No, I don't screen them.
We don't, though. I mean, point is we don't. We include everyone.
If we can get to you, we take it, but we don't not take a call, because...
And no issue is off limits.
Exactly.
It's time for your weekly state of expansion / franchise relocation address, because the guys, Dan Blakely and Gary Green, just had Dave Schultz, the writer that wrote the story in Toronto, floating the idea of a second franchise in Toronto.
Well, you know, it's interesting. If a reporter wants to float an idea, and it's reported that he's floating an idea, that has one reaction in the world. And when a reporter reports something as fact that isn't, it brings an entirely different reaction. I don't know with Mr. Schultz what he said when he was just recently on with the guys, but the fact of the matter is, this notion that somehow anybody's actively discussing or considering a second team in Toronto isn't a true statement. I don't know how to say it any other way, and I have a real hesitancy to respond to an article that seems to be based on anonymous sources. I always question the validity of articles that are based on that premise, and whether or not this story, you know, was really worthy of the front page of the newspaper makes me scratch my head. At the end of the day, and we said this last week as well, we're not looking at relocating any franchises. We're not looking at expanding. We're not, as a league, having any active discussions whatsoever on either topic. But if we were to engage in either process, we would explore all alternatives and all possibilities. But for somebody to come away with the impression that somehow, you know, we're actively considering right now adding a franchise anywhere,
right,
I think that's doing a disservice to our fans.
Let's play the if game for a second. If a franchise were to move, spring up, brand new and what have you, in Toronto, money would have to be paid to the Toronto Maple Leafs because they would be infringing on Toronto's territory. But here's the question.
That's not necessarily true.
It isn't.
The answer is expansion or the relocation of a franchise is done by a majority vote of the board. It is not subject to the veto or will of any particular team. And I don't know how many times.
But it happens, and it has happened, well, and it would happen, would it not?
Not necessarily. Who knows?
The Leafs would say, this is fine with us?
It's not the Leafs' decision, and that's the point we keep making. It is a league decision to be made by a vote of the Board of Governors.
So the Board of Governors could say, yes, franchise X, you can spring up in Toronto, and don't worry about the Leafs.
No, well, you know what? The board, in considering it, may say, you know, as we look at what's going on, we think, and let's not talk about Toronto. We'll talk about anywhere.
Sure,
we
could be anywhere.
We want to put a team in a particular market. We think it may impact the club.
Like Anaheim did in Los Angeles.
And we as a league have decided these are the terms and conditions of the relocation. But it is a league decision. It is not subject to the decision-making of any particular club.
I guess that kind of cuts off what the question was going to be, like how much could a team like Toronto expect from an expansion franchise? And does the Board of Governors, if they decided to award Toronto money, do they define that number?
The board is the one that makes this decision.
And they define
the
number.
They will define whatever the conditions are. Exactly. Just like they define who they want to admit to the league as a partner.
Sure.
You know, and I had heard or had seen in that article that, you know, some number like $700 million was floated. I mean, where do people make this stuff up?
It's a nice round number,
you know,
$700 million. I think Marion Gabrick was just offered wasn't he?
By the way, as much as I would like to see franchise values increase, that is just in the stratosphere.
Yeah.
You know, it should happen during our lifetimes, but I don't see it.
You want to squeeze in a call while we've got a guest lined
okay
up?
Do you want?
Well,
we're going to
squeeze
in a break.
Call.
You know,
we're getting
our executive producer is instructing me. You already yelled at me for not using the cough button when I cleared my throat and I covered the mic. You know, he's telling us we haven't gone to a break. You know, just because we're on the road doesn't let you take greater liberties with us. Bill and I are getting very upset by this. One call we can take?
And guess
okay
what? I can't fire you, but Gary can.
No, I wouldn't do that. We like Greg Baldinger very much.
Yeah, we do.
To a point. Why don't we take our first caller, and then we'll take our first guest. Bill from Tallahassee, you're on with Bill and Gary. This is XM 204 and Sirius 208, if I remember correctly.
That's right.
From last week. Why couldn't they give us the same number? Hey, Bill, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Commissioner. How about you, sir?
I'm great. What's going on?
Well, not too much. Just watching it rain out here and everything and listening to your real good discussions and everything. I always enjoy it.
Thank you.
But I do have a serious question for you in regards to the finances. The other sports, namely NASCAR, is one on that depends a lot on their sponsors, like from their big banking corporations and everything. With the way the market is now, some of these are reporting some problems. And I noticed recently the Atlanta Thrashers franchise has done a ticket deal with some free food in it. And I'm wondering if this is a dangerous trend we're going down. And what are your comments on the economic situation for the NHL?
Well, the economic situation is a question I get asked a lot. Is one that we have no doubt that if the economy continues to struggle and that happens for a prolonged period of time, we will no doubt be impacted like every other business and every other industry. But the fact of the matter is, 91 or so games into our 1,230-game regular season, we're not seeing any meaningful negative impact from the economy. In fact, season ticket sales are up. Our attendance is up somewhere around 3%. We're actually actively selling sponsorships, which is bucking the trend in sports as well. We announced
And people are buying.
We announced a deal with Honda last week. We've got another couple of deals in the pipeline. We seem poised, by all objective indicators, to be having another strong season. Having said that, I understand it could slow down very quickly and very dramatically. The point about free food and other amenities, I think in all sports, teams are looking to be as accommodating, as entertaining as possible, making sure that the experience that our fans have when they come to our games is one that they feel good about. And this notion, for example, of club seats with free food and free drink is caught on in a lot of different places throughout the league. And it's really the clubs adjusting to the marketplace and what fans expect, not so much something that they're doing to react to the economy with respect to, because clubs have been doing that type of thing for years.
Never had a problem with free food.
You taking us out to a break, Bill?
Yeah, we're going to step out. And when we come back,
we will have Brian Lawton, the new executive vice president of hockey operations for the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Hi, this is Sidney Crosby, the Pittsburgh Penguins, and you're listening to NHL Hour with Commissioner Gary Bettman on NHL Radio. Now back to Commissioner Bettman.
Well, thank you, Sidney. That was very nice. With us is Brian Lawton. I got the title wrong before the break because they actually changed your title today. You're now the Executive Vice President and General Manager. Welcome.
Thank you very much. My pleasure to be here.
You were the number one overall pick in 1983. People don't know that. And you played for, I think, 12 teams?
Not quite 12. It felt like 12. But it was a great training ground to understand what all the good teams do. So, and I was a very, very, very average player, as I said the other day. But I was fortunate enough to play 500-plus games in the league and really give me a foundation to, in a lot of ways, help me end up where I am today.
Well, before we talk about where you ended up now, you were an agent for a number of years. Yeah. How many players did you represent, and what was the view of the world as an agent versus what you've now experienced in the last few months on the other side?
I really enjoyed being an agent. I mean, I was a player in my 20s, and I wanted to learn the business side of hockey in my 30s, which I did, and I did that using a vehicle of being an agent. I moved around so much as a player that I wanted to stay put for a while. So when I started an agency, it gave me a chance to be in one city and start my family and all that good stuff, which has been great. I always took things pretty much in stride as an agent, and it probably took me about 3 days before I completely lost my mind in this job. So that's the biggest thing that I've found to date.
What is causing you to lose your mind? Please share. I don't want to sound like The View, having had Whoopi Goldberg on last week, but, you know, that's quite a statement. I mean, talk to people about what it's like to be a new general manager.
Well, it's very exciting, and I feel super fortunate to be working for Len Berry and Oren Kulas. They're great guys. They've bestowed a lot of confidence in me, and that's helped me as a new person in this job to really feel confident to do the things that we're trying to accomplish long term. We've made a lot of changes with our club. We started with a very basic analysis, looking at each position in our team, looking at the age of our team, and then work backwards from there. And it's been ongoing literally from the moment I started. I started on June 25th, which is kind of a ludicrous proposition to start, you know, literally 5-6 days before free agency. That's the way it worked out, though. I was thrilled about it, and there hasn't been a dull moment since.
How have you found the Tampa Bay area? And do you sense an excitement over sports or an impact on the hockey club because of the success that the baseball team's having?
Well, I'm always, you know, the world belongs to the optimist. And right now down in Tampa, it's just a fantastic sports town. not only are the Rays doing terrific, making the World Series, Cinderella story from where they've come from, as was commented before this time, it's been a long time coming, but they are there now, and they had a tremendous season, and the fans have really gotten behind them. But also the Buccaneers are off to a great start in football. And I personally, like I said, I'm an optimist. I like to see everybody doing well. You know, there's a lot of competition in today's world for the entertainment dollar. We're in the entertainment business, but it's just more of a calmer thing for us. We're happy for those sports teams that are doing well, and we know we're going to get there also.
You were an 18-year-old in the NHL. You have a number one pick who you drafted last June, who is young like you were. do you see a lot of yourself? Not necessarily from a skill standpoint, but in terms of what you have to go through to make that kind of adjustment.
Not a lot of myself. He's a lot better player than I ever was or ever will be. But a lot of Vinny LeCavier, who was also a first pick exactly 10 years ago for the Lightning. So hopefully between Vinny, myself, and some of the other veteran players that we signed this summer, we can provide a great atmosphere for Steven Stamkos to learn and to get better and to do it in an environment that isn't so much short term. He hasn't played a lot of minutes yet. He's starting to play more every night now. That's been a lot of talk. But, you know, we're not so concerned with tomorrow or the next day. We're concerned with the next 1, 2, 5, 10 years of his career. That's the way we're looking at it, and he's done great so far.
What kind of kid is he?
You know what? He's just such a humble young man. The biggest thing that I noticed from being a first pick back in the early 80s, I was also the first American that was a first pick, but I felt like there was kind of a little animosity against me back then. And I look at how the players treat Steven today, and the game has changed in that we have more younger guys playing in the league earlier, but it's really impressive to see the way the other players treat him, and quite frankly, he's earned it. He's a very humble, terrific young man.
Everything we hear, he's a great kid. Maybe that animosity helped prepare you for your your life as an agent.
For confrontation.
That's right. No, I'm
well, here at my first general manager's meetings ever, and I certainly didn't feel any animosity. We've got a terrific bunch of guys here, and obviously a terrific leadership team, and you know, it's really been enjoyable.
You brought back a flamboyant coach who had been away from the bench for over a decade. Was that a tough decision, and how do you think Barry's adjusting?
Well, I think Barry's adjusting quite well. Barry was actually hired before I was hired, technically. Yeah, but with that said, he wasn't on a desert island, and he was away from the game, but Bill's smiling over here because he knows how current and expert his knowledge is on the game, and so was Barry's. And he's just a great leader of men. He's a terrific human being, and the feeling out process has been a little bit of a slow start for our club. I'm not overly surprised. When you make the number of roster changes, and really when you analyze our organization from top to bottom, we have new owners, we have new management, we have new coaches, and we have 12 new players.
And it takes time to gel,
it
particularly
does.
In the consummate team sport.
Absolutely. And you actually gave me that advice back in the summer to be patient. And I think that's very, very...
You mean you're actually listening to me? How did you like the trip to Europe? How did you enjoy playing in Prague?
Absolutely enjoyed it. It was wonderful. It's amazing the excitement that was created over there. We were treated, I don't know if I can say this term, but we were treated like rock stars from the minute we left New York. Flying over on a souped-up certain charter flight from compliments of Mark Cuban. And just everything was so first class. There was so much excitement. It was just a tremendous joy to be over there to represent the league, to be part of, you know, a historic event. We also played a game in Bratislava, which yes, the NHL had never done before. And those are, you know, what we call scrapbook moments for the players. They'll look back when you get older like I am now and you look back at certain things. This is one of them that'll really stand out for players.
So how are you enjoying your first general manager's meeting?
So far, so good. It was pretty tame stuff, to say the least, so far. But, you know, like I said, the guys have been terrific in there to me and everybody.
Welcome. We wish you a good season, and thanks for stopping up.
My pleasure.
Good.
Brian, thanks, man. We'll see you soon.
Great to see you, Bill.
Yep, you too. We're going to ask everybody to stay on hold. We've got a nice group of people that are waiting to ask Commissioner Gary Bettman some questions. And when we come back, we will get to them. You're listening to the NHL Hour from NHL Radio.
Hi, this is Martin Brodeur of the New Jersey Devils. You're listening to NHL Hour with Commissioner Gary Bettman on NHL Radio. Now back to Commissioner Bettman.
Thank you, Marty. He's
Taking time out from a day after his 98th shutout to do the throwback to you? That's unreal.
It is unreal. And I'm grateful. And he's somebody who I'm probably going to have to follow around shortly as he goes to set the record as the winningest goaltender.
No kidding. Just unbelievable. The Devils are they're a strong team this year. They were last year, but there seems to be some comfort level with Brent Sutter and the guys and the people they brought in. I like watching the Devils. They're a fun team to watch. Want to give everybody the phone number again. We're going to get back to your calls here, but it's 877-645-6696. 877-645-6696.
You know, speaking of last night, Devils Dallas game. I think there were a lot of people either anticipating or hoping for fireworks, which never materialized.
Well, there were a lot of people that were after Sean Avery, the Devils.
Yes, but it was a more controlled environment than perhaps what people were expecting.
Stay tuned, and I'm sure your office will.
No, we always
There's
do.
More to come.
Let's take a call, as a matter of fact. Pogi from Los Angeles, you're on with Bill and Gary. This is XM 204 and Sirius 208. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Nice talking to both of you guys. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Couple of questions. First one is regarding the shootout, and then I want to ask you a personal question. The goals that are scored on the shootout, is there any ideas of maybe in the future counting those as goals?
Not from a statistical standpoint, because they're not really goals in the classic sense. And so we a long time ago when we first implemented the shootout, decided we weren't going to count those.
Not everybody gets an opportunity to shoot.
And statistically, we thought it would just be a little more inflationary than was appropriate under the circumstances. And your second question?
Second question, I want to kind of ask you how you became the commissioner and how you got into the NHL, and how does someone go about maybe getting a job in the NHL?
We have, over the last few years, hired lots and lots of people, and if you're interested, you send us a resume, and our human resources department will evaluate it and see whether or not your qualifications match up with an opening that we may have. With respect to me personally, the NHL had decided that it was looking for a new chief executive. I think at the time they were called presidents, and they hired an executive recruiting firm, and they did a search of all the people who might be suitable, might be qualified to be president or commissioner, and they came and visited with me. There was a screening process that the recruiting firm went to, and they kept narrowing down the field. And ultimately, there was a committee, I think, of five owners who interviewed five candidates one afternoon. And lo and behold, my number was picked.
One interview?
Well, no, there were a series of interviews. But from the ownership standpoint, the owner committee, who would make a recommendation to the board, screened the finalists and made a decision. Not unlike what the NFL did with Roger Goodell. And then the Board of Governors had to vote on it as well. And a couple of weeks after the recommendation came from the search committee that I was their candidate, I went before the board, and the board voted me in.
How did you think you had done in the interview process? Were you very happy with what you presented to them that day that they all interviewed you?
Boy, talk about a walk down memory lane. Now, I thought I had a good interview.
I mean, obviously you did, but I'm just wondering if you felt you did.
It was a good dialogue. In other words, we had a nice conversation. We talked about a lot of things of importance to the league and the future of the league. And I kind of felt that the owners there and I were on the same wavelength. And a couple of hours after my interview, I got a phone call. So, you know, I didn't have a whole lot of time to dwell on it. And obviously, I was elated. And I also knew that the board was going to have to vote on me as well. This was a long time ago. I'm glad I can still remember it at my advanced age.
Me too.
16 years. Why don't we take our next caller, Scott in Bridgeport, Connecticut. You're on with Bill and Gary, XM 204, Sirius 208.
Good afternoon, Bill and the Commish.
How are you?
Good. First time calling this new season.
Well, welcome.
Good to have you guys back.
Thanks for calling.
My question, Commissioner, you could probably answer this a little more accurately, is regarding to NHL center ice.
Yes.
I've been a long-time customer since 94. The last couple seasons is with a brand-new cable company. I was with DirecTV before that. And I am a new high-definition television owner. In short, the NHL Center Ice with my cable company will have a what they call an in-demand channel that shows you the schedule and what channels those are on.
So that means you're either on Comcast or Time Warner, most likely.
Right, I have Cablevision.
Yep. Oh, or Cablevision, right.
Yep. And they will occasionally list that a game is in high definition. And unfortunately, my cable company says that they're unable to give us those games in high definition, only standard. And I don't know if you gentlemen have ever watched on a 42-inch television or higher a hockey game on 480i is pretty unpalpable. So I end up watching it on my 20-inch television just so I could see the puck and see the players. And I'm wondering if the league can do anything to control that or you know, Cablevision, for instance, their call to fame is they offer the most free HD television out there.
Well, actually,
so here's something I'm paying for and I can't see in an HD.
By the way, I think I understand the issue of watching a non-HD signal for a hockey game on an HD set. It gets a little washed out, and sometimes you have to collapse the picture to see it as you would on a traditional TV set. We're in transition. This is a question of capacity. While Cablevision and some of the other cable operators have lots of cable channels, most of them are filled with the regular programming of the programs that they carry 24/7. So Home Box Office, Showtime, the Discovery Channel, and on and on and on, the local TV stations that they carry, they're using that capacity on a regular basis. It's getting better. They're carrying more and more. I know, for example, DirecTV has recently upgraded, and I'm noticing I'm getting more games than ever before in high definition. It's not that people don't want to give it to you. It's about making sure that they're equipped to handle the capacity, and I believe over the next year or so, it is only going to get better. Probably in the next 2 or 3 years, everything will be in HD. And by the way, Versus is in HD. Right now, there's a joint golf versus channel at night. It's Versus. And I think, actually, at some point in the next few months, they're going to move to a full-time during the day versus channel. But for the hockey games, you can get Versus in HD. You can get NBC in HD. And probably 50% of our local games are in HD. It's really just a question of channel capacity for the satellite and cable providers. But it will get better over time. Be patient. But the only other thing you can do in the interim is see what your alternatives are if you want to make a switch and see exactly how many channels they have in HD on a regular basis.
In the meantime, don't throw that small TV away.
No, you don't actually
have
to.
It's a lifesaver.
You can adjust your high definition set to bring the picture in so you're not using the full screen. Michael in Flint, Michigan, you're on XM 204, Sirius 208 with Gary and Bill. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
You know, I'm a young caller here. I'm obviously a Red Wings fan. You know, I was thinking about it on the way home, and I'm a big fan of this radio station as well, Bill. Thank you for doing this. But, you know, more importantly, I'm wondering if you can explain, Commissioner Bettman, how you decided after the lockout that what the salary cap would be. And then regarding, you know, we see, you know, the Red Wings, obviously, signing the big names, but they can't go over and above like the luxury tax in the MLB. And we have the Philadelphia Flyers who already have $50 million, you know, set away next year, and they don't even have a goalie. What are the GMs talking about in the meeting about the salary cap and if it will expand next year?
Actually, we're not talking very much at this session about the salary cap. The general managers, the fourth season into the new system, understand how it works. There aren't a whole lot of surprises. The first year we were back, we had a plugged cap that we negotiated with the union of $39 million because we had no idea what the revenues were going to be. And in fact, the revenues set an all-time revenue record, even though we were coming back from a year off, and we wound up owing the players under our system, we guarantee them a certain percentage of revenues. I think we owed them somewhere around $50 million.
What's the percentage this year? For the cap?
It's 57? It's 56 point
six,
something, okay. Maybe 57, depending on how our revenues are. And the purpose of the salary cap is to make sure all teams can afford to be competitive. We have revenue sharing. And the salary cap next year will be entirely dependent on what our revenues were this year. That's how it works. This year, the cap's around $56 million. If it turns out because of the economics of the world that revenues slow down and the revenues don't reach the level that would support a $56 million cap, if we overspend, we get the money back, which is why we have an escrow. And so the system is designed to take into account the increase and decrease, if it unfortunately happens, in revenues. And to the extent teams don't afford themselves enough room, there is a consequence to that. And they're going to have to get down. And if that means moving players, then that's what they have to do. The Red Wings, since you're a Red Wings fan, and my next guest is on his way up, have done a remarkable job from being a high payroll team with great success to adjusting to a cap system and continuing their great success.
So if the salary cap does drop, each player rebates a percentage of his salary to make sure the team can get under
or the escrow count?
Two
different things. What the salary cap is next year has nothing to do with what happens this year.
Right.
In order for, with a cap at $56 million, the teams are now spending a certain amount of money. If they wind up spending what turns out to be more than 56 point whatever or 57% of the revenues, whatever the percentage is, then we get the money back to take us down to the appropriate percentage, which is why there's an escrow of 13.5% of salaries being put aside in the event that there needs to be a refund because the league overpaid. Unlike baseball or even the NBA, we don't have a luxury tax. We don't have a soft cap. We have a hard cap, which we think has worked extremely well to give us the competitiveness and economic health that we felt we needed. Why don't we take another call? Joe in Massachusetts, XM 204, Sirius 208. This is Bill and Gary.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Great show. I think a lot of people really enjoy hearing about the business side of the game, so we appreciate it.
Thank you for listening and calling in.
Sure. I have a question about the marketing of the game. What efforts is the NHL putting into marketing the game on the big three TV networks and on Fox compared to just Versus and the NHL Network and NHL Radio? It seems like a lot of the advertisement effort goes into those channels that already have established watchers and listeners versus new people that you're trying to bring into the game.
Well, actually, we want to bring new people in the game, but we're also most focused on serving the fans that we have and getting them to watch and connect with the game as much as possible, either on television nationally or locally, on NHL.com and on the NHL Network. Sports leagues historically don't buy advertising time on other networks. In fact, we've had networks where we've tried to buy time when we were coming back from the work stoppage that wouldn't take our advertising because they don't have us. When you see other sports on a variety of networks, traditionally they are carried on those networks because we're all given advertising and promotional time on the networks that carry us.
You wait for the lean days and then see who will take your money.
There you go.
We're going to step out here. We're going to take a break. Oh, great.
We're staying right here.
Let's go then right now. This is terrific.
With us is Steve Yzerman, Vice President of Hockey Operations for the Detroit Red Wings and the General Manager of the Canadian Hockey Team for Vancouver 2010. How are you, Steve?
I'm doing great, Gary. Thank you.
Did I get your title right?
Close enough, yeah. For the Olympic Team, Executive Director as opposed to General Manager. And I think added a couple of words on. I'm just VP of Hockey at the Red Wings.
There you go. Well, it's good to have you with you. You've been with the Red Wings forever. 21 years old, you were their captain. How do you account for such a long, stable, excellent career?
Well, I think it starts with the Ilitches. They bought the team in 82 and have remained owners of the team. Jimmy D came in at the time as general manager. He is now our senior vice president. Kenny Holland came in 83. It's the way our organization is run, and that starts with the Ilitches. As you see, after my retirement, Nicholas Lidstrom has played his entire career in Detroit, Thomas Holmstrom. We're hoping Datsyuk and Zetterberg do the same thing. It's just kind of been the way that the Ilitches have run their businesses, not only with the Red Wings, the other ones. If they found people to be good employees and loyal employees, they've rewarded them beyond their playing or throughout their careers in other businesses.
When you were on the way up to visit with us from the general managers meeting, by the way, is it still going on?
Yes, yeah, they're in some interesting things right now, actually, yeah.
Really?
Not that the
Mike?
Other part wasn't interesting.
Can you share?
Well, I was just discussing some of the IIHF, the Radulov situation, and also now moving into player contracts as far as teams loaning players to Europe. Very interesting, actually.
That's good. But we were talking as you were coming up. A lot of people, including me, have marveled at how the Red Wings went from being one of the high payroll teams and enjoying tremendous success, adjusting to a new cap world where you had to make some fundamental changes and not be able to spend as much as you had been spending, and still putting an excellent team, obviously, with the Stanley Cup on the ice. How do you account for your organization's ability to make that transition?
Well, I think it's just been from drafting well. Our teams that won the Stanley Cup in 97 and 98, the bulk of that team were all players that were drafted by the Red Wings. From myself to Nicholas Lidstrom, Sergei Fedorov, Martin LaPointe, Darren McCarty, Brendan Shanahan was the one significant acquisition that was done through a trade of our own draft picks and our own players. So it was done through the draft. We got a little bit lucky in the timing that coming out of the lockout in the new CBA, some excellent young players, Henrik and Pavel, namely, who were draft choices as well, were still relatively early. Were at the right stage in their career where they were blossoming the superstars, but hadn't their contracts hadn't quite reached that level. So we were able to get under the cap and remain under the cap for a while and watch those players blossom in the last few years. But to answer your question simply, I think our organization has drafted extremely well through the years.
What's the biggest changes that you've seen in the game in the over two decades that you've been playing or being an executive?
Well, I think over the two decades, the biggest change, I think, is players are bigger, stronger, and faster. I think that the pace of the game has increased gradually throughout the course of my time in the NHL. And then most significantly, coming out of, you know, going into the lockout, whereas the trap had kind of taken over the game, and obviously it was very effective, and it really forced us to change the way the game was played. That was one significant change in the game prior to the lockout. Coming out of the lockout, the new rules have changed the game dramatically, and the way the game is officiated, eliminating the red line, it's much more of a skating game, much more flow to the game.
What was the biggest surprise to you when you stopped playing and you moved to management?
No meal money.
Actually, if you travel with the team, they
still
get the
it.
Meal money.
Oh, okay. I forgot about that.
I like traveling with the team much more than I do commercially. You know, Gary, nothing has surprised me dramatically. I've learned a lot, and I find it very interesting. You know, as players, we sit in the locker room and wonder why our team has done this or why we've made this move or why we don't make that move. Well, sitting in there in the discussions, I understand why a lot of decisions are made and the logic behind them, and things make a lot more sense. Whether you agree with it or not, there's a lot of logic in every decision, and there's a lot of thought put into it. And I've really come to understand why a lot of things are done, and you appreciate, not only within our organization, but around the league, you know, in discussing different situations that may come up or moves that are made, you understand why teams are doing some of the things they do.
We're talking to Steve Yzerman. You've been to Board of Governors meetings, you've been to a general manager meeting. How do you compare the two?
Very similar. I find the owners are extremely passionate about the game and a lot of the little things. What you, you know, I remember last year, I think it was in Pebble Beach at the meeting when we had a long debate about which color jersey we should wear at home as opposed to on the road. And these were the owners of the teams, and they were quite passionate about it. And I know our ownership is very passionate on the issue, and they love the red jersey. So I think maybe the only difference, this is the first general manager's meeting I've been to, and I think the GMs, there's issues directly related to their club that they're focused on, and then they want to move on. But I was really I shouldn't say pleasantly surprised, but I thought it was very interesting to note how passionate the ownership is about a lot of issues and minor things about their teams and about their league.
What's the most difficult part? Obviously, congratulations on the Stanley Cup win, and having a short summer is a good thing. But what problems does that present to you starting the next season?
I'm not so. I think the only thing that becomes difficult for a player is that it takes a lot of energy. A season is draining in itself. To get all the way to the Stanley Cup Finals and to win, it's very draining. And then you've got to come back 3 months later. Guys train all year round, so I don't think the short break is that big a deal. They take a few weeks off, and away they go in their training. But to win the Stanley Cup again is very draining as well. You've just come off it. Injuries, the amount of time you're on the ice, the intensity that you play with, particularly in the playoffs, you're just bound to suffer more injuries, and that's what makes it difficult. And as you get older, you just accumulate more miles and more miles, and it makes it more difficult. So that is the one challenge, is I think, for coming back to try and win again is really just trying to stay healthy through the whole thing, because it's a real physical, it's physically taxing extremely.
Let's change gears and talk about the Olympics in Vancouver in 2010. They make you executive director. Excited, I assume,
extremely, and
daunting at the same time.
I'm not really thinking too far ahead. I was excited about the challenge for the last 2 years. I got to work with and for Hockey Canada at the World Championships, and I really enjoyed the experience. It reaffirmed my feeling that I love being in management. I love being a part of building an organization, a team, whether it be the national team or an NHL team. They were great learning experiences for me, and I experienced winning and I experienced losing, although in the final game, but it was the same way I felt as a player in losing. So the competitiveness is still there. My feeling moving forward with the Olympics is with the management team. I've asked Kevin Lowe, Kenny Holland, Doug Armstrong, all very experienced guys as general managers in all aspects of the game, to work with me and not only to assist me, but we're going to make the decisions together, and we'll do the same thing with the coaching staff. So I guess it is somewhat daunting if you look at the big picture, but I'm just trying to really go slowly through this and make one decision at a time with the group.
Give our listeners a little bit of a sense. What do you do from now until the Olympics to get ready for the Olympics? How do you put the team together? What are the things you have to think about? What decisions have to be made?
Well, first off, it was obviously putting them, whoever it was I wanted on the management team together. And as you know, we announced that on the weekend. So our management team is in place. And over the next few weeks, some scheduling things, really. Obviously, we're out. Everybody's starting to watch games. And more so, we left Ottawa on the weekend that start watching games, start formulating your own or compiling your own long list of players. And we'll get together in September and consolidate that list to form our initial long list of players to kind of focus in more on our scouting.
How many do you think you'll have on that initial long list, roughly?
Potentially, gosh, you can have as many as you want. And the reason more so for the list at this time is for the IHF or the IOC, excuse me, to submit a list of players that have to go in. Actually, I think it's for in every country is different. It would be for the Canadian Olympic Committee. Give them a list for security purposes. I'm not exactly sure what security that requires, but they need an initial list of players. So we have to kind of make that list pretty broad to cover a lot of guys, because if they're not on that list, they're not eligible. So our most important list will be for a training camp that we have next summer, or orientation camp would be more an accurate description of it. And they'll be somewhere between 30 to the low 40s for that camp to try and have a proper training camp or camp that players can have a scrimmages and whatnot. So try to answer your question somewhat briefly, Gary, is over the next few weeks, I'll have some discussions with Hockey Canada to set some of the dates as far as when we have our camp. We'll have after we name our coaching staff, which we don't intend to do probably till the end of the Stanley Cup playoffs this year, set some dates for a management coaching staff camp early in the summer, probably in July, set up another training camp for next August. And then in the meantime, it's just going over some logistic things as far as what we're going to do on site at the Olympics, where the management staff will stay, whether we can make it work in the Olympic Village or we stay in hotels. A lot of little administrative things. But most importantly, the biggest thing is watching players and really getting a feel for getting to know some of the coaches out there that we don't know, maybe I don't know, and gathering all our information and working towards forming a coaching staff.
Are there tryouts or not really?
Well, the tryouts really began on Saturday when we named our management staff, and now it's to watch players, evaluate them over the course of this year and early next year, with the idea of naming the team sometime in December of 09, mid-December to late December of 09. So I'd like to use that more as a tryout, to think to bring the guys together in August or sometime in the off season to play in a week-long camp. You know, as you know, we're not going to have pre-tournament games that we could really have a legitimate tryout. I think the only way to do it, the tryout actually has started for a lot of players, is the last two world championships that I was a part of and some of these guys competed in, and how they play over the course of this year and early next season. That's their tryout.
What's your recollections of your participation in international competition?
I've loved every experience. Going back, I think I played in the World Juniors in 83, my first World Championship in 85, was in Nagano in 98, and also obviously in Salt Lake in 02, and tremendous experiences. Just being a part of the whole Olympic experience and being in the Olympic Village with the other athletes, it was pretty humbling actually for us as players, because you're in the village with, 1,000 or 2,000 athletes, and they're totally focused on their own sport. They could care less that the NHL players are there, and we really enjoyed being a part of that and being a part of the Canadian team and getting to know some of the other athletes. And then the stage that you're on, the games are being played, and whether they were in Japan or here in North America, I think we really enjoyed it. And you get out there and you play that very first game of the tournament, you realize that this is something pretty special. There's a lot of emotion that goes into international hockey. So I thought the experiences were tremendous.
Does it make your life a little easier that the games are going to be played on NHL ice in Vancouver?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure. The way that, as you know, the way the lines are set up with us moving the blue lines out and eliminating the red line, it's 200 by 85, but it's a much bigger rink now. I like the game on the international ice surface, at least at the Olympic level. When you have, the most skilled players, it's pretty entertaining. I think it'll be the majority of players in the Olympic tournament are going to be guys that come out of the NHL playing on North American ice surface. So, I think you know what to expect from your players more. So some guys haven't had a lot of experience on the big ice. You don't know with as much certainty as you can have how they're going to feel out there, how they're going to react out there.
Time to go.
Time to go, Steve.
Yeah. Sorry we couldn't go on for another hour. We need to change the name to the NHL 2 Hour.
There's always something to talk about.
I still have to do my day job, so we won't be doing that.
I got to get back downstairs and see if they've decided anything on jerseys or whatnot. So.
Me too. me too. Steve, thanks for joining us. Good luck with the Red Wings this year and in Vancouver.
Appreciate
with Team Canada.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Yeah, thanks, Steve. That's great. Steve Yzerman, former Red Wing great and still part of their management team, and will be the man at the top of the food chain for the Canadian Olympic team for the 2010 Vancouver Olympics. What a resume.
Incredible. We didn't get to the other two managers, I promised, but I think Brian Lawton and Steve Yzerman more than gave our listeners what I hope was a good hour.
Fantastic. You said that, early in the show that this was a good group of guys, the GMs. Not that it hasn't been a good group in the past, but this group is special. Both of these guys kind of reiterated that, Brian Lawton especially.
Absolutely, and he's the newest one to the game.
Yeah. So the NHL Hour has come and gone from the windy city of Chicago. Thanks for being part of us and part of the show. And for those of you who we didn't get to that were on hold, call us back next week, because we will be on the air at 4 Eastern for the NHL Hour, coming to you from the NHL studio in New York. Our thanks to Bob Boxer, who set us up locally, Dan Cronin in New York. Dan, you're overpaid and underworked today. Mike Trigiani in Toronto. That's it for the NHL Hour. Espo and Ross here next.